for just about everything for the outdoors. Go to MidwayUSA.com.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit Tecovas.com. That's Tecovas.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to Tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
On today's show, we will be continuing with our questions from our Elk Bros mailbox. However, one important thing about our show with our mailbox is that our content is inspired by you, our grinders and listeners. So today, we'll be introducing you to Mr. Bryson Bercy and his story for a special Elk Bros conversation that we hope makes a difference in your life. So my friends, pull up a chair, adjust your volumes just right, and welcome to Blue Collar Elk Hunting.
Welcome to Blue Collar Elk Hunting, brought to you by ElkBros.com, with your host, Gilbert Ornelas, and elk hunting coach, Joe Gilley. You want to hunt elk, and they live to hunt elk. Their goal is to share with you what they have learned grinding it out for over 35 seasons, doing what they love. So come on into camp and set a spell. Welcome to Blue Collar Elk Hunters.
Hello there, everyone. If it's your first time with us, glad to have you. Hope you enjoy our show. And as always, for those blue-collar hunters following our show and grinding it out with us every week, welcome back to Elk Camp. I'm Gilbert Ornelas, the host of your show, and coming to us, that's right, we've got the northern leader of the Venezuelan Mafia from Fort Worth, Texas, Mr. Manano Gratterong, and from Cuesta, New Mexico. That's right, we've got the legend in the house, Mr. R.C. Knox, and from Cimarron. No, we don't have El Jefe tonight, but we got the ninja, Mr. Leroy Chavez, in the house. And our plan today for our show, guys, is like we promised. We're going to go to something and continued with our listeners from last week. You know, we had some great questions, and then we'll be introducing you guys to an elk hunter that, just like most of you, for a conversation that has affected all of us here at Elk Bros, and really, y'all, is the main reason behind our show for today. But more to come on that. And if we have more time, we'll go back to a lot of those questions. So, bros, how's it going, Chav?
Going good. How are you?
Man, doing fantastic. Legend, how's the weather up there in Cuesta, New Mexico?
Snowy.
Yeah, we're expecting snow. Snowy Cuesta.
We're expecting snow tomorrow, too.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, it's still been warm and rainy down here in South Texas. So I call Houston South Texas. I mean, cause anything further than that's really dang near Mexico. So it's been warm, but we're supposed to get a little reprieve here this weekend, get a little cooler weather in. So, me and Logan might go traipse around the woods and try to chase some whitetails this weekend. So, we'll see. We tried our luck fishing last weekend and fished a little tournament, a little derby up there on Sam Rayburn, and ended up 20th, but we had a good time. Didn't break anything. So that's usually a good tournament and you don't break nothing.
Yeah.
For sure. Manano, how's the weather up in Big D's? Is it still raining up there?
No, it was a beautiful day today, and especially Luis is not around here today, so it's a pretty day, though.
It's a beautiful day.
Man, yes, I'm telling you, is. Luis catches it when he ain't here. I mean, we've given Manano enough hell, that's for sure, so
right, we'll send a little now bit that way. Now it's my turn.
Absolutely. Well, fellas, y'all, as our listeners know, Joe is with us, but he's not with us. He'll be producing the show, but El Jefe's sitting this one out. So, man, we've got a really cool show for you guys today. And let's get this party started and head on over to our Elk Bros mailbox. Chav, you'll start us out today, brother.
Okay. This first letter is from Tatum Holiday from Illinois. And he says, I hear a lot of shows talking about a cold calling scenario, but I'm not sure how it differs from other scenarios or how I would know to do one. What is it and when do you use it? And I'm a little confused about that too, Gilbert. Could you give me a differentiate for me?
Yeah, and I get where he's coming from because a lot of guys don't understand what a cold calling scenario is versus any other type of scenario, right? So a scenario, if you and I are walking in the woods and we're, you know, in an area we feel like there are some elk, and then we hear an elk, and let's say there's a fence line, a border line from us, we hear an elk and we hear a rut fest going on over there. Well, a different scenario from a cold calling would be us putting on our own rut fest because we've heard something, right? We want to get a reaction out of them. But a cold calling scenario, you know, a lot of guys think, well, this is when you get in the woods, you just start calling. Well, that's not really necessarily a cold calling scenario. A cold calling scenario should happen when they have put themselves in a position where they're around elk, right? They've seen sign. They either smell them, see tracks, fresh droppings. Then you can feel good about doing a cold calling scenario where we're not hearing a bull or a cow or anything like that, but we're going to project to see what we get back, right? So we're going to start a cold calling scenario on our own. And the big thing about those cold calling scenarios is your setup. You don't want to just start calling and not understand where your elk could come from. And I think RC would agree that the number one most important thing about that setup is your wind, right?
Most definitely.
And I mean,
because have the wind right, you're.
Yeah, I mean, and elk are generally curious animals. When they hear another elk, they're going to want to try to get the wind if they can. So these things, they're all got to take in place. You know, when you start out, you definitely want to start calling. You know, we always hear it, Elk Bros. We're lovers before we're fighters, especially depending on the time of year, especially if it's early. Those early season cold calling scenarios are just want to, you know, cast out a little, I call it, it's like fishing. We're casting our lure out there and trying to drag it back to get a bite, you know. This year when I had Tom with me, we really were cold calling. I mean, we didn't really have anything going on, but we were in a piece of property that was kind of landlocked and we couldn't go a whole lot of ways because we had some boundaries around us. So we just started cold calling and casting out calls that making elk sounds, right? And before you know it, we had something respond and come into us, and Tom actually took his first bull doing that. So
so to summarize it, a regular calling scenario is when you've seen an elk or you've heard an elk.
Absolutely.
And a cold calling scenario is when you haven't seen or haven't heard, but you're in an area where there's a lot of sign.
Yeah.
And the area looks good, and that's when you start casting your calls.
Okay. Or you might even have smelled them there.
Yes.
All right. Yeah. Smell. Yeah.
The smell and the wind right. Yeah. And it's, you know, everything.
It's a good pinch point that you might be in a good funnel point where they would come and you'd have a really good opportunity at shooting a bull or shooting a cow, whichever tag you might have. But the setup is the crucial part of the cold calling scenario, as it is with any scenario. But that cold calling scenario is, it's really getting started with soft cow calls, you know. Mm-hmm. And maybe one location bugle, you know, but really the soft cow calls and mews and calf calls and stuff like that to, you know, make other elk feel like there are elk in the area. And when they feel like there's elk in the area, they're going to come take a look, especially, bulls and satellite bulls, you know, as well. I mean, I didn't, you know, do that cold calling scenario shoot, maybe 10 minutes and here comes a big spike. You know, I mean, he's got to go, come see where the party's going on. So, at the end of the day, that's kind of how a cold calling scenario starts, but a great way to break it down, RC and Chav. Fantastic.
Manano, this is from next, Mr. Brother. Adam.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes,
sir. Hey guys, I'm 90% of the time a solo hunter when I do a calling sequence like a group of elk with a bull. Should I stay in one place and do a calling sequence, or should I move around a bit to give it a more realistic sound like there are multiple animals? So I'm the lowest member of this group, so the less experience.
It's a workout. It's a workout what he's talking about. RC and I did several of them this year hunting together, and I'm telling you, by the time you're done with it, you're flat wore out because you're moving around, you're raking trees, you know, you're stomping around there like other elk would be, making racket. I mean, yes, everything you can do to move around if you're not inside the bubble. When you're inside the bubble, man, it's time to get set and ready because he's coming, right? But as you're doing a calling sequence like a group of elk, yeah, you want to sound like the herd of elk that's in there. Look, man, kicking logs and all that stuff, really, I've seen guys kick a log and the bull go, woo! I mean, he bugles because of that, right? So all of those things go into play. And, man, I stomp around and crack limbs, and, man, it's a full workout. Of course, you know, I can't breathe up there anyway, so just about 10 seconds of that, man, I'm ready to pass out. But at the end of the day, yes, you know, that calling sequence and that scenario is even better when you can move around and sound like a herd of elk, right, RC?
That's right.
I remember one time Joe was like 150 yards away. He was to the other side of the mountain, and he was calling. He was, I don't know, he spent about 45 minutes without any response. And then he, we got to see elk to the deer side of the other side of the mountain, but, they didn't respond. And then he improvised, I think it was a lost cow or something like that. Lost calf.
Right.
So the situation just changed from second, but he got 45, I don't know, even an hour before that situation arrived. It's a workout and you have to be able to see, how you can move accordingly without blow the situation up. If you're inside the bubble, you got, I don't know how many eyes looking around.
For sure.
So you don't want to, you know, start moving around and because you can make a calling sequence from the same spot, in a decent manner without moving, you know, around with so many eyeballs looking around.
Yeah,
you,
and remember, when you're calling, we're using our tube behind us, right?
Right.
So
yeah,
we're making those calls sound further than they are.
Yeah, that's what it's important, is to call behind you so they can't pinpoint where you're at.
Exactly.
And make sure you have cover behind you too, because they'll look over you.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we'll harken back to when you and I, Chav, called those bulls into about 12 feet. You know, there was no way we could call at them. I had to call behind me and make it sound even further back there. It's just barely getting a sound out. And, I mean, it was the difference maker in them, you know, deciding, you know, whether they were going to come across that barrier or not. Same thing this year. Adam's bull left. Tom's bull left three times, and I called him back every time. And finally, one little chuckle behind me. And I mean, it was very faint, like a, that did it. He couldn't stand it, had to come see what was over there behind us. But had I been calling at him, it would have never worked. You know, he'd have been thinking, I need to see him right here, you know. Mm-hmm. So, again, the way we're calling in that sequence behind us makes a huge difference in us being able to that's a great observation, too, Manano, is how many eyes are looking at us. Are we in a group of elk when we do that, or are we calling at a lone bull who's trying to come into the party? You know what I mean? So, that was really, really good question, Mr. Visser, that's for sure. Y'all, before we continue with the questions, we got a real, real special guest tonight that has a story that we all wanted to talk about. You see, each of us can relate how our lives have changed through elk hunting. From a physical, mental, spiritual, or even our relationships that we've developed along the way, to possible newfound strengths, accomplishments, or things that we've grown to know and accept about ourselves and all of those around us. It has given us purpose or a reason to be excited about our lives. Does it help us through hard times and make us stronger and more confident? Heck yes. Or does it make us realize shortcomings that we need to face every day and that we are still facing, right? I mean, with all that in mind, we want to get the ball rolling tonight and welcome today's guest with his story, Mr. Bryson Bursey. Welcome, Bryson.
Welcome, Bryson.
Welcome, Bryson.
Welcome, brother.
Hey, Elk Bros. Thank y'all for having me. I'm so
Absolutely.
Excited to be here. Tell you, I'm tickled to death.
Well, you don't get to see Luis. That's a bless, bro.
You're lucky.
Be happy, bro.
Is that right? Okay. Well, I'll just have to take your word for that then, I suppose.
Yeah. Bryson, how long have you been elk hunting, brother?
Man, not long. Y'all are probably the veterans here. This was 2022 was my third year. I started in, I guess, 2019. And so this was
Are you an archery year. Elk hunter?
I am, yeah. I started archery hunting probably 10 years ago. My little brother used to be, he and I went the opposite way. He was really big into hunting when he was kind of younger. And then as he got older, he kind of phased out of it. And as I was younger, I wasn't into hunting quite as much and kind of phased into it and got more serious as I got older. And especially as soon as I, you know, shot my first deer with a bow. And after that, it was kind of, you know, I realized the difficulty level is, you know, significantly increased and Absolutely. Just trying to get better after that. Yeah. So I love bow hunting, archery hunting.
That's fantastic. And what do you do for a living, brother?
Oh man, if I tell you that, y'all might not like me anymore.
No.
I'm an attorney. So I was a songwriter a long time ago.
Yeah, I'm leaving, bro.
I know.
I'm an attorney.
Yeah. I knew this thing, man. He's already out, man. He's done.
It's dangerous.
I know, right? But you know, but now you got somebody if you need me, you know?
Absolutely. Yes, where'd you, right, where'd you go to law school, brother?
I went to Texas A&M, School of Law.
Okay.
And I was, gotcha. My undergrad was at Sam Houston, so I'm a Bearcat there. So,
okay.
Texas right. boys, born
right
and raised.
The road from us.
A great university,
yeah.
bro.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Yeah. It, both of them are in there and they're both growing and, I'm really blessed to be able to go to both of those schools and glad to be, alma maters there. So.
Yeah. Cool. Well, man, you know, all the guys here, man, this is pretty, benign, man. We really kind of run things off of, you know, who's got what to say. And, you know, we heard so much about your story. So definitely wanted to have you on to get you started with us and tell us your elk hunting, about your elk hunting journey and how elk hunting's changed your life. You know, when was the first elk hunt that you went on? 3 years ago?
It was, yeah. So I'll just kind of tell you about how I got into it. And if sure. you want me to stop or something like that, then you can just tell me. But, so like I said, as I got into bow hunting, you know, it kind of, you know, transgressed from like wanting to, you know, be able to go from sitting in blinds to spot and stalk, right? I was always wanting to increase the level of difficulty. And so as I, you know, continued to hunt, you know, as far as that, then it was deer management, right? Finding, you know, bigger deer to shoot every year and having deer around you, you know, that you can have a good crop of deer. But, you know, I talked with a friend of mine who had also got into bow hunting and he was, he's now retired Navy SEAL, and he and I had talked about, wanting to do an elk hunt is a bucket list thing. And back then I was in no kind of shape to do that. He obviously, you know, would have had no trouble doing it. But, so that was kind of when I put it on my bucket list, was kind of when I was in law school wanting to, you know, kind of do more hunting. I was still studying, but it's kind of, you know, had hunting on the mind a lot at the same time as well, especially during final season. But in any event, that's kind of went on the bucket list. And then, I graduated law school and ended up working, and I hadn't, you know, even put together an elk hunt, and one of my clients just happened to say that, you know, they do an elk hunt every year and they say they do an over the counter deal. And so I was like, you know, well, that sounded like something I could do. You know, they're like, yeah, you just pay money and you go. You don't have to, you know, be on a lease or anything like that. Cause I literally had no idea about anything at all. Colorado, GMUs, anything. I had no idea about what elk hunting was. It was just, you know, I wanted to go on an archery elk hunt. That was it.
Rashan, you made a comment that you were in no shape. Why weren't you in shape?
Oh man, because I just had let myself go before that. Through law school and stuff like that, I just had not taken care of myself. I was 60 pounds overweight, probably more than that if you Google what my proper weight is supposed to be. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in 2019, I'd made a commitment that, you know, when I'd met these guys that were my clients and they said, you know, this is an elk hunt, you can do it. All you got to do is, you know, pay a little money and you're welcome to go with our group. And I said, great. I don't want to die on the mountain. And so
I knew. Man, I'm telling you, I've been the other route. I tried it at 325 pounds. It is no fun, baby.
My dad went elk hunting years ago with, and I don't remember much about it except for the exhaustion.
It was fun, but I like to diet.
Yeah, all I remember is him saying how exhausted he was, and he had mules and all that stuff and everything. Yeah. So I just knew at that point, and I'd been in good shape before, and I knew finally, like, I needed to do something and to make a commitment so that, you know, I would have, you know, be able to hold myself accountable. Because when I got in shape, you know, 8 years before that, it was kind of at the height of my music career, and I wanted to, you know, be in good shape and stuff like that, because sure, you need to be presentable a lot of times in that industry to folks. And so it was really kind of geared towards that. But then when I kind of transitioned to law school, it was kind of like, well, you know, I'm just kind of studying, kind of like back in college kind of thing. And so it was one of those deals where, you know, I'd let myself slip, and I needed to give myself a reason to push myself and hold myself accountable.
So you let something slip that I can't let get by. You all said the music. So let's talk a little bit about Bryson Bercy, the man, too. Not only are you a lawyer, but you are a musician as well, aren't you, brother? Yeah. Songwriter, musician.
Well, I don't know how y'all use those terms kind of loosely. I did that for, you know, about eight years professionally, and it was a lot of fun. It was one of those deals. I was going to, you know, Sam Houston in undergrad, and I was just kind of playing music for fun,
at
and
the
all
Fox.
Of a sudden. I played at the Fox. Yeah, sure.
I'm sure.
Did. Many a times I played there and every other venue.
At the Chicken too, huh?
Yep. I played at the Dixie. If it's in College Station or anywhere around that southeast part of Texas, I imagine.
That's my stomping grounds, brother. Grimes County, the land of milk and honey.
Oh, I know Grimes County very well. Yeah.
I was born and raised there.
Yes, sir. Okay. Well, you're not too far than just a stone's throw, really, from Walker County down there. But I got my start down there, and then all of a sudden, you know, I was in the middle of college, and I started getting, you know, paid in beer and money to do it. And I was like, well, shoot, I just keep doing this. You know, I mean, what am I doing here? And then my dad had the wherewithal to make sure I kept my, you know, my nose to the grindstone, my head stay in the course. And I did graduate, thank God. And I was really glad for him, you know, making sure I did that. And I was able to go and do it after that. Recorded two records, toured all over the, you know, southwestern U.S., went to Ireland, played Steamboat.
Sweet.
I have a song on, Josh Abbott and I wrote a song that went on one of his records called Dance With You All Night Long. So I've been doing a lot of that. Haven't been doing much of the touring because I've been lawyering, but I still do a lot of writing. I've found a lot of folks up here. I live in Parker County now, outside of Weatherford.
Sure.
So there are a lot of talented folks, up around here. And, you know, so I'm still doing the writing stuff and still getting, you know, my creative, juices flowing that way, because otherwise I feel like I'd explode. But, you know, I've got to do that, and then I've also got to do the hunting part of it too, because that's.
Yeah, I'm gonna give you a shameless plug. If you guys want to check out more of the Bryson Bercy Band, y'all check him out on Apple iTunes.
Oh well, thank you. Yeah, it's there, Pandora, Spotify, wherever you can do a lot of it. It's all good to me.
So if I can intervene,
please.
You said you were like 60 pounds over.
I was, yeah.
Wait, did you hire a trainer or did you just get on your own?
There's a picture, I think, on my Instagram. Well, so it's so weird when I've lost weight. In 2012, if you look on my Instagram stuff, you can literally see it's like you go back to my old music day pictures and stuff. You can see where I was in good shape and then obviously put on weight. But there, I think I put a picture on there of what I did to lose it initially in 2019. It was a picture of my backpack, my golf clubs, and my golden retriever, and like a set of dumbbells. Because, you know, COVID happened and the world shut down. And one of the things that was, you know, just kind of, you know, a crutch for me and stuff. And, you know, what I always found myself doing is I was always involved in associations or groups, and there was always like a happy hour or something after work. And so I always find myself either drinking or eating or snacking right before you'd go home and do stuff. And it was like, you know, I needed to cut that part out. But at the same time, you know, you want to be able to, be in the social group with everybody and network and stuff like that. So I was able to, when COVID happened, that shut everything down. I said, you know, finally here, I'm going to focus on myself. And I had to have, you know, I was working a lot as a lawyer. I really needed a mental health break. And what I decided to do was I committed to going on the elk hunt. And so I put just a bunch of weight in a backpack, literally like I took the weights off the dumbbells and I put them in the backpack and I put some water in there. And I put it on my back and I started rucking around the neighborhood that I lived in. And I took my golden retriever Molly with me and I started, you know, I decided I wanted to learn how to train dogs better too. And so I worked on training her off leash, on that. And so I was doing kind of both things. And I was also listening to a lot of podcasts and stuff that I'd want to listen to, audio books and stuff. And so it really kind of gave me that mental break, but then I was also able to, you know, work out, work on my body and stuff and obviously kick up the endorphins, which made me feel a lot better to train my dog. And so I really look forward to, at the end of the day, that part of my day, you know, just kind of being able to take that break and stuff, which is kind of like what September is for me too. Every time, you know, summer comes around, I start thinking about the September and, you know, the aspens and all the Quakies and stuff, just calling, you know, and all that stuff, just wanting to get north. And so for me, it's just kind of that it was that part of the day that I wanted to do that. And if I didn't do it, I felt lazy. There were literally, I mean, I'm a faithful guy. And so I felt like the Lord was talking to me through all of this stuff. And I had a guy that was in my neighborhood. He was, I think he was 85 years old and he walked every day and he saw me going by. And I swear everybody thought I was the weird guy because literally I'd got all my hunting clothes in and my boots. And I wanted to break it all in because I'm one of those guys. Like I'm probably like, if people are listening to this, they're probably like me. Like you Google everything you can to know about elk hunting, about gear. And I mean, I was Googling, like I told you, about how to be a good guest on a podcast and not to mess anything up before I came on here. But so I was looking up all the equipment and stuff and I got all my stuff and it said, you know, use it to see if you like it. So I was walking around with, you know, the stuff I'd bought and everything just to switch my pack up right instead of, you know, having the weights in there. Then when I finally started getting my gear, I started putting that stuff in there and everybody knew me at that point. And everybody, you know, it come out and talk to me, but this one guy, he was, you know, I think he was 80 or 85 years old from Montana, an elk hunter, wouldn't even know it. But he walks around all the time and he said, man, the secret is just to keep on walking. Don't ever stop moving. You know, if you don't use it, you lose it kind of deal. Yep. And our neighbor across the street, she was 89 years old and she came over here from Ireland and I don't care if the wind was blowing 40 or 50 miles an hour that day. She was walking down to that stop sign like she did every day and back. And she was out there working in her yard every morning. So it was really kind of a testament. Like if I wasn't out there doing it and saw them doing it, I was like, man, there's really no excuse. And so once I got going and especially once I started seeing results, you know, I mean, after that, you know, you start seeing pictures and stuff, the weight starts falling off and it's like, you know, I want to stick with this. And what I really did too was I tried to set small goals for myself. I mean, I wanted to learn as much as I could about, I realized I don't know a lot about, you know, the gear out there. And so I really want to make sure I was, you know, familiar with my gear and I got the right stuff. And then of course I started looking up a lot of, shooting and techniques and fundamentals, a lot of the John Dudley stuff and everything to try to figure out that. So instead of focusing on other things that, you know, I used to before, I tried to, if I wasn't working out, transition to focus in my, you know, if I wasn't working out to try to work on my fitness, then to work on my shooting or something like that, or work on my knowledge of, you know, of hunting and stuff. And I don't know how much that even played into my success this last year, probably none. But I mean, honestly, if we're being honest about it, but you know, I'm glad I'd done all that because it really helped me. And then, you know, I started that in, I think I posted the photos. It's all on my Instagram stuff. I think I started in February of 2019. And then by September of 2019, I was down, I think 50 pounds. And then since then I've gone down, more and then gone back up, and I fluctuated, but I've always kept off around the 50 pounds. I was like walking around at 240, 245, and now I go between 185 to 195. Just wow, depending awesome, on bro. Where I am. So,
yeah, that's awesome, brother.
And, it's, you know, I've got four daughters and it was really one of those things too. I wanted to be able to play with them and it really, you know, I basically, you know, put my pack from where it was all, you know, my fat on my gut to my back because I can't imagine like, and after I did all that too, once I got up there, it still sucked. The mountain still kicked my tail. I mean, it wasn't easy at all. I mean, it was still,
Bryson, listen, we hunted this year with an Olympic athlete, man. The guy who actually swam in the Olympic trials. I mean, Adam Messner is one of the best athletes I've ever met, right? And this cat, he will tell you that mountain whipped his tail. And I'm just going to say it whipped his ass bad. Like, I mean, it put him down for a full day. I mean, he was down, you know, and he didn't know exactly what hit him. So we get it, brother. I mean, 100%, this elk hunting has changed so many lives. It really is what has brought the Elk Bros together, just like it's changed your life because of the life changing things you needed to make your hunt a little more, I won't just say successful, but enjoyable. Right. And something that has prolonged your life. You've prolonged your life to see your daughters now get married and those kinds of, I mean, no man knows the hour and when it's coming for him. But at the end of the day, we don't need to stand in line in front of a freight train to know that that kind of lifestyle is going to run us over someday. Right. So, I mean, just the stuff that you've had to do, like many of us, you know, I wanted to, you to hear a little bit from us too. I mean, RC will let you know how elk hunting's changed his life. This is a guy who's been elk hunting for many years, right? Like, how old are you, Bryson?
I'm 39 years old.
Okay, you're 39. My elk hunting career started on my 40th birthday. For I don't know if you've listened to some of our podcasts, but I started elk hunting when I was 40 years old. My wife gave it to me for my 40th birthday and sent me to the mountains. And, man, I had no freaking clue what I was in for. But I did know when I got done the first time that I had to change my life. Because I enjoyed it so much, I had to change my life. I was 325-30 pounds, right? And today I'm about 275. That's too heavy. So we're working every day to get that down. I'm going to get down to around 235, which is really where my fighting weight is. But I'm going to let RC give you a little background on how elk hunting's changed his life as well.
Well, it really has because I started at a very young age and it was, did lots and lots and lots and lots of guiding and, got to the point to where, I had a client and, I just basically chewed him out and I'm going, well, it's time for me to quit guiding. So I quit. And was out of the pocket for, oh, maybe 3 years. And it's like, there's something there that's not right. There's something there's not right. And when I got with Joe and he said that they were going to start coaching instead of guiding, I was like, that sounds like a pretty interesting deal. So when I got back and got to go the first year with these guys, it was like, man, talk about really miss it. And it's just like you say, you know, I have real bad knees. I have asthma. And it's like, you know, you just go and you just put on your braces and you take your little inhaler and you just hit it and you just keep on going because, man, there is nothing like it. And it just changes your life. I mean, you know, I'm going, I can't believe I missed 3 or 4 years of not doing what I love.
Well, I love RC to death. And, you know, there was a traumatic deal that happened between that 3 and 4 years for all of us. We lost kind of our patriarch, right? that really started Elk Bros 13 years ago. His name was Carl Gamage, and it was just like RC's brother. So losing that, I'm sure, played a part in RC having a loss of passion for it and everything else too. I mean, losing Carl was hard for everybody, but Joe and myself were really determined to keep this dream alive. And I think RC, you could probably vouch for Carl as well. He would love to see what we got going on now.
Gosh, yeah. You know, would he ever?
And he's the reason why we keep Elk Camp going on weekly, man. That guy changed our lives, right? Oh. He changed RC's life. He changed Joe's life. He changed my life. When we talk about Elk Bros, we cannot leave out Carl Arlen Gamage. We just can't, because he's really the starter of all of it, right? You know, it changed my life. I actually wanted to hunt with the famous Joe Gilia, who's one of the baddest men on the mountain, right? But at the end of the day, you got to be able to go with Joe to be able to hunt with Joe. And listen, Joe is part mountain goat, okay? And I mean, he will run up a mountain to get his legs warmed up while you try to go as hard as you can go, and you're about to die because somebody sucked up all the oxygen out of that damn mountain before you got there, you know? So I know exactly what it's like and how it changed our lives. Now today, I'm still 275 pounds, but I promise you, if there's an elk bugling, I'm going, right? I did some things this year that I never thought I was going to be able to do, and I lived through it. So I 100% know that, I can accomplish a lot of things, right? So, I just can say that it is being around Chav and Joe the last 13 years of my life, and RC Knox as well, Carl Gamage. It changed my life. I can't tell you in so many, I mean, this whole podcast could be 2 hours long on how it changed my life, right? But elk hunting in itself, what we love to do, that call for September, it changed my life for the better. And I'm a better husband. I'm a better father. I'm a better elk hunter, bow hunter. I'm better because of these guys, because of Elk Bros, right? Because of every one of these guys. Leroy Chavez has been on my side and with me. Other than 2019, he's been there every year with me, right? And then this cat battled. You know, you talk about a battle. This cat battled something in 2019. Chav, I'm going to let you run with that and let Mr. Bryson know how that changed your life.
It will. 2019, it was during an elk hunt. You know, I wasn't feeling very well. I had no idea what was wrong. Doctors didn't have any idea. But I got sick during that elk hunt, and I was able to see a ER doctor who diagnosed me as having stage 4 cancer. And from there, it just went downhill. And I think at one point I was at 98 pounds. And I literally felt I had 1 foot out of this world. But, you know, what kept me going during those tough times, of course, were the Elk Bros helped quite a bit. You know, they were in contact. Once I did get out of there, they ended up buying me parallel bars, and I'm still working on them. And I've kind of regained the ability to walk on flat surfaces. You know, I can't get up and down those mountains anymore. But, you know, if it wasn't for family, the fact that I wanted to walk my daughter down the aisle and elk hunting, I probably wouldn't be here today.
And accepting your induction into the New Mexico Hall of Fame as well.
Well, that's another story for another time. But right now, you know, one of the things I look forward to is September, you know, being up in the mountains with the guys. And they've been really gracious. They've set me up in blinds the last 2 years and almost got one last year. This year, no luck. But I still work out like crazy. I think I'm working out harder now than I did before, you know, what I can do. You know, somebody says, what do you do all day? And I go, well, I work out half the day pretty much when you count all the hours. It's not continuous, but I'm working out.
Right.
But just the fact that there's a big goal at the end of the year in September, you know, I really look forward to that. Just being up in the mountains, because, you know, it's like that Tim McGraw song, you know, live life like you were dying, you know, and you know, slow down, smell the roses. And, you know, elk hunting is a big part of that. And, you know, Bryson, too, you know, your dedication to losing that much weight is amazing. That's going to keep. That's going to keep me going too, because, you know, I can't do a lot of anaerobic stuff, but I love to eat. So, you
know, I got a good company there, because I don't know. I'm not even sure what anaerobic means. If that means running, that's usually a defense mechanism for me.
For us to be running.
I ruck and walk slow. If I'm running, you better be worried too.
But when you mentioned that you walk a lot with a lot of weight, you know, I've been starting to walk. I think I could probably do more, and you're an inspiration for me too. All these guys, you've been great.
Look, don't let him fool you, brother. He outwalked all of us in the mountains today, man.
We
put a blind up for him. I guarantee he's a mile in, a mile out, right? And it was not easy going. He made it look like it was easy. My ass was dragging going in there and out of there, right? So look, I mean, Chav's been a huge inspiration for all of us. And you know, when he was going through all that, we kept saying, if Chav can, we can, right? Mm-hmm. And it was unbelievable. We did get him to elk camp in 2020 with us, and he got to experience elk camp. We had a phenomenal camp. We killed a lot of really nice bulls that year, and it was absolutely unbelievable. But you talked about cooking and eating. Well, our number one head chef in the world is on here with us, and his name is Manano Gratteron. We call him, you know, he's always giving us too much to eat in elk camp, but I want to hear from him and let him tell us a little bit how Elk Bros and elk hunting in general has changed his life.
Well, that's a tough question, Beto, because I'm always messing with people, and it's really hard to be serious in a conversation. But this one will be hard, because it's not elk hunting. Elk Bros changed my life, and especially Chav.
Yeah,
I was listening about the battle he went through, and for a moment it took me back to those days. And now I'm a believer, because I saw it.
Yeah.
Nobody mm-hmm. told me about it. I saw it. Mm-hmm. So, I was there. I was actually that night. I prepared paella. I think it was right.
Yes. Yes.
And I believe Joe told me, no, that's a dream. It causes, you know, like a reaction or allergic reaction. And I knew it wasn't. I knew it. Actually, yeah. I told Luis, or I told, I think it was Luis.
Yeah.
I told, when Joe got, Chav to the ER, place, and he said, this is bad, bro.
Yeah.
I have seen this before. This is not good. So, and then when we, realized of the situation, I was really bad, bro. So it's hard to talk about it, because I saw it.
Yeah.
And being able to see Chav walking in the woods again, so man.
So awesome.
It's awesome. Unbelievable. So
yeah. Mm-hmm. It's been a huge inspiration to us. And Bryson, what advice would you give to others that, you know, if they wanted to start elk hunting and, but they worry about their age or physical conditioning or any kind of experience level, what would you tell them?
Grinders tuning in, thank you for listening to the Blue Collar Elk Hunting Podcast. Our goal is to share our knowledge and help you flatten that learning curve so that you too can have some of the very same incredible experiences that have given all of us here at Elk Bros a lifetime of memories. If you like what you hear or see, you can get all of this information plus so much more from our Base Camp Elk Hunting Training Camp, the first in a series of online courses from our Blue Collar Elk Academy. Our Base Camp Training Camp allows me to use my coaching style and share almost 40 years of elk hunting experiences successfully hunting elk on public lands, as well as over 20 years guiding hunters of all ages and experience levels. This course will be like nothing you have ever experienced in concept and structure, using success-based coaching techniques that will elevate your confidence and skill sets. Our camp will prepare you specifically from that final moment most in your control, those final minutes or seconds the elk is in front of you, backwards through each step and level, allowing you to see, visualize, understand, and relate every coaching point to what lies ahead, the next step, the next thought process, the next success. Because, y'all, you've already been there. You know what it looks like. By tapping my 30 years of teaching and coaching experience, our camps are developed considering multiple learning modes with text, visuals, audio, as well as video. And Base Camp will benefit those new to elk hunting all the way to the 10 to 15 year vet. So if you are looking for that one thing to help you fill that tag this year, invest in the most important piece of equipment there is, you and your elk hunting knowledge. You can find the Blue Collar Elk Hunting Academy and the Base Camp Training Camp at elkbros.com. That's ELKBROS.com. Keep dreaming of the screaming, believing and achieving, and most of all, keep grinding.
Well, I mean, I'm not a doctor or anything, but, you know, obviously, but I mean, I think, you know, if you want to go out and do it, do it. I mean, it's one of those deals where nobody's going to do it for you. You've got to make the decision. And it's one of those things where it's picking yourself up by the bootstraps, one foot in front of the other. I mean, my hunt this year was one of those deals where it was, Murphy's Law. You know, if it could go wrong, it did go wrong. And that day that I shot my elk, I wouldn't have been able to tell you that that was going to be the day, because it was just not going the right way. But, you know, had I not been able to develop the fortitude and determination early on, you know, with just trying to walk and ruck, you know, there are tons of days I didn't want to do it. And there are plenty of days that I failed, you know, and that's one of the things too, is it's one of those deals where I tried to keep myself to, it's not like a weight loss deal. It's a goal to be able to move in the mountains. And if I had a day that I didn't stick to a diet plan or something like that, you know, I didn't kick myself about it. I just made sure that, you know, even if I went out and had beers or something like that, I still walked my 2.5 miles every night, you know, or if I didn't get it that night, I got up early the next morning and did it, you know. And then my buddy said, hey, let's do a 100 pushups a day contest for 100 days. And I did that. You know, so he challenged me with that. But then, like, you know, when we were packing out the elk, it was still like everything. We didn't eat the whole day. It was supposed to be a noon hunt. I missed a massive bear that morning, and I was beating myself up and thinking, you know, man, this, you know, if it could go wrong, it's going wrong. And I had my buddy there with me, and lo and behold, we set up waiting for this big bear to come in, set up this, you know, little makeshift blind we made out of trees and stuff, and dadgum, sun is going down, we're sitting water, and elk walks in behind us. So, I mean, the blind's no good. We hadn't eaten all day, and I shoot the elk. So we have no sustenance and anything. We're out of water. And then, you know, I shoot at like 7 p.m. and we're not back in camp until 3:30 a.m. Wow. You know, but it's, it was one of those deals where, you know, your adrenaline hits you, but it's, you know, nothing was easy at all, from whether it was trying to lose the weight or just trying to be a better shoot. I struggle all the time with, you know, shot placement and stuff with, you know, not wanting with target panic and stuff like that. And so, I mean, between that and you know, trying to keep yourself in shape and heart rate and just knowledge and all that stuff, it's just, to me, I try to just constantly be a student. And for me, just trying to be in shape, like you're saying, most of those guys you go out with, the young flat bellies and mountain goats, I mean, golly, I mean, can't keep up with them at all. You know, I mean, they're standing up there looking down at me, and I'm just like breathing like the big bad wolf, you know, like trying to walk.
I hunted with Larry Gill this year, and Larry's over 80 years old. And he walked me through the mountain. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you, brother.
I mean, that
guy's an amazing athlete, right? Now, he only weighs as much as my left foot, so it's not like he's got to carry a whole lot, right? But at the end of the day, Mr. Gill's an amazing athlete and, you know, and an awesome elk hunter, has a lot of experience in the woods and, you know, But again, like you say, it really doesn't matter. It's the hard. We've said this 1,000 times on the podcast. It's the hard that makes elk hunting great, right? There is absolutely nothing easy about it. And if Luis was here, he would tell. I wish Luis was here because he's had a tumultuous journey hunting elk, right? Much like I have. I mean, look, it was very tumultuous my first 2 or 3 years hunting elk, and then. Once you kill one bull, Joe said this and RC said this 1,000 times. I mean, RC had been my guide for a long time before RC kind of stepped away from hunting a little bit. But RC told me, Gilbert, when you kill one, it will get easier, right? And I really didn't believe that, but he was 100% right. And,
glad to hear that.
It does. What I'm talking about is the finish. The finish gets easier. All that stuff leading up to that finish, it's real deal, brother. I mean, it doesn't get easier. Climbing up and down the hills. I mean, our first hunt this year, RC goes, oh, we're just going to take a little hike. And it was 5 miles in and 5 miles back. And we like to die, man. Yeah. I did anyway. And he goes, man, I don't know. I'm just not, I'm not feeling so good the next day, and I wasn't either, but we kept getting up every morning and going, and every morning, every evening. I mean, at the end of the day, the hard is what makes it great. Everybody can everybody agree it's the hard that makes it great?
Most definitely. Exactly. Most definitely.
If it was easy, everybody'd do it, And I liked what y'all were talking about earlier about the elk trail
responded your question before, but I'm not a good, example, because I landed in this group and I landed with expert everywhere, and to me it was like a piece of cake. But
I've seen you pass clean out on one of my help, brother. Ain't wasn't no piece of cake. You passed out because you was wore out from killing and skinning an elk the day before, and then I drug you in there all night. So
I landed in a group with expert. They know how to call elk. They know how to everything. After I killed my first
one, kind of spoiled you.
It was easier, of course, but when you're around people with that amount of knowledge, what could possibly go wrong? It's hunting. You gotta know it's hunting.
I've always tried to do the same thing.
There's nothing guaranteed. But, if you don't know how to call a scenario or any given situation, they will run and tell you, hey, do this, such and such and such, or go there and you will see tracks, or you are hunting with the Elbros has been an incredible and unbelievable experience for me, as far as, knowledge, learning. And my learning curve was like from the bottom to the roof, like, in seconds, because of you guys being around an expert, it's a whole different deals. And I remember a podcast we were talking about the hunting partner, actually Joe creator in the academy. There's a
100andonly.com.
Man, please for God's
join
sake.
That.
Go and find a good.
I did that. I joined that because I got the guys that I usually hunt with decided to do a father son thing. So I had to decide, am I going to stay home or go by myself?
Right.
And so I went the third year solo.
I'm like those guys that found the perfect wife. And then you hear in the street people complaining about the wife and, oh man, I'm having a hard time. No, I'm happily married here.
I did join that though, and I actually found some guys that I connected with because I was trying to find somebody after I found y'all, I found the hunting buddy thing. So I joined that. I actually made 2 friends on there that I didn't get to hunt with, but we'll probably plan for, in the future. And if not, there are 2 people that now I keep in contact with that have the same, interest.
And not only for the hunting part of the equation, I found, unbelievable people, human beings, friends.
Yeah, great human beings.
They're lifelong. Become my best friends. So.
Yeah. That was the best part about this trip for me was I was going solo.
I feel pretty bad when we realize about the job situation, and and it was tough for us. So, and, and now seeing Chaff running the mountains again and, you know, making, he's quiet. He's like, when he says something, everybody, even the birds, even the elk, shut up. So
they listen.
He's the ninja.
Well, we call him the ninja, man. Look, Bryson, so tell us all how it all, you know, we've heard how it's changed your life and everything, but tell us all how it came full circle for you this year. And, let's hear your story about how you harvested your elk.
Well, I mean, it was, you know, so I'd gone 2 years before with, the clients that I'd met, and it didn't seem like any
Colorado
elk. We were hunting in Colorado, and they were over the counter units, and we had, more than, I think both trips we had the first 2 years, more than four people with us. And so it was kind of, and everybody was an amateur except for one or two of us. And, you know, that was, you know, had a couple people to call, but like, it wasn't like everything that the stories that I'd heard, like there weren't elk screaming at all. I heard no elk. And it was just like, what the hell am I doing up here? Where are they? You know, I mean, and we literally, I think I saw one, you know, and what it was a spike literally walked 10 yards from me. And then like, I couldn't even get my bow up if I wanted to, but you couldn't shoot a spike anyways. But I mean, I'd never imagined one sneaking in that quiet that I couldn't hear, but
that's that really big an animal that can be that quiet.
And then when it ran and smelled me, it sounded like the whole daggone forest above me was coming down. I mean, I was concerned, but so those first 2 years, it was just like, man, you know, and so I was wanting to go to a different unit and I, you know, talked to kind of my hunting buddies about that, maybe looking at different units. And they decided that the two guys that I usually go with decided they wanted to do a father son thing, which I was like, that's totally get it. You know, y'all need to do that. And so for me, it was like, well, I'm either going to have to find a hunting buddy or I'm going to go on my own or I'm not going to go. But not going was not an option for me because I kept, you know, I mean, I was at this point, I mean, I was going to do it. And so that, you know, I went and got myself a Garmin, you know, deal to make sure if I was going alone, I'd picked out this one unit, you know, mapped out all my spots, hadn't found a hunting buddy, but I got, you know, a Garmin deal that way. If I got into trouble or something like that, you know, sprang an ankle, broke a leg, you know, I could get a hold of somebody. And I was actually kind of excited about the spot camping part of it and hunting solo because I don't have to worry about upsetting somebody, right, if I do something wrong or if I want to change tactics. And so I found that unit, you know, and again, here Murphy's Law shows up, right, found this unit. And so then I was like, all right, what I need to do next? Okay, I need, just in case I get lucky, I need to find somebody to help me pack an elk out because the last thing I want to do is go through all this and lose the daggum meat up there because I shoot it in the middle of the day and I can't get it out by myself. You know, I'm not one of those kind of guys that thinks, you know, I'm, you know, He-Man, especially not in Colorado. Yeah. And so I started calling around to folks and I couldn't get really a hold of anybody that I thought, you know, was going to be reliable. And then I got a hold of, these other folks, and actually just turned course. And I had some, you know, that was kind of the first, you know, hit of good luck I had. It was a place called All Out Outfitters, JT Robbins and their crew. The caliber of people out there. That's what I was kind of wanting to say is the people you meet in elk hunting, right? Is, you know, after I shot my elk, you know, after the story, there are people I elk hunted with before and people I've hunted with my whole life that, you know, said, cool, good job, congrats. And some people that hadn't said anything at all to me. And so, you know, it's kind of like, man, wow. But I met, you know, all of these people up there and basically JT said, hey, here's another unit. Here's what I do. I guide in this trophy unit, but there's an over-the-counter unit really close by, and you can base camp out of here, and they had amazing food. So basically all I had to do was sleep and hunt. I didn't have to – because you know how it is when you're elk hunting. I mean, at the end of the day, boiling water is a chore. I mean, you don't even want to do that. I mean, you're boiling everything, even when you're spot camping. That is just, you know, after hiking all day and not seeing anything. And so I was really lucky to have that, and so I could just, you know – hunt. And those guys took good care of me. Their food was great and everything. And then they had some guys working for them too that kind of would go out and guide folks as well. But then they also, every night, you know, you're sitting there when they're guiding folks in trophy unit, staring over these topo maps and just getting to listen to these folks that have hunted 20, 25 years and have all of this experience. You know, that was my big deal for it was I didn't have to cook, you know, boil water, and I had a spot to sleep. And then people would know if I decided to spot camp. I told them, I said, you know, because, you know, JT told me, he goes, I know this area, and if you're willing to hike out there and put in the work, I can get you into elk. And he was right. It was work, you know, but so that was the deal. Is I just wanted to make sure I had everything, every opportunity available I could to get out there and shoot something. But, you know, at the end of the day, we're not seeing stuff, but I'm still listening to all these guys that have so much more experience than me, looking at topo maps, showing places that they're looking at going, helping me, you know, that's helping me read my topo maps and listen to them talk about, you know, looking at trees and waters and trails and stuff like that. I mean, it was just all of that stuff to me is invaluable that I got the benefit of. And not only that,
I mean, knowledge is priceless.
And I still talk to all of those guys weekly. I mean, even now, after the season's over, they're still texting me pictures of elk they shoot. I'm sending them pictures of stuff I'm doing. We still keep in touch about next year. And it was one of those deals where it's like I didn't expect, a relationship like that where it's, you know, you're just kind of getting a base camp spot, guide, hunter kind of deal. It was really you got up there, and I felt like I was around all the country boys that I grew up with, and everybody wanted you to be successful. And when I was – you know, they were all, you know, sending me congratulations, saying everything, doing everything they could to help. I mean, even the cook came down and helped us, you know, pack out. It was literally, we ran out of lights, and I was down there because the guy that was with me to help pack out, Jake, he was going to find the cook, Mike, who's the only other guy in camp, said, I'll come down there and help y'all carry a quarter too. And so they both knew the mountain like the back of their hand, thank goodness, because Jake had used, you know, he was a younger guy, and he's, you know, out there all the time. And so I'd let him use my backup battery and stuff to stay on his phone all day. I was just totally content with sitting on my pack and just, you know, taking it all in and being in the environment and stuff like that, you know. But so his phone's dead. Mine's at 15%, right? And so he's got my headlight too. I'm the only one that has headlight. We had no food or water. It's kind of like Murphy's Law, right? We went out there basically just to do a morning hunt. And we started going early in the morning that day, and we come upon this big black bear. And so I bought a black bear tag, and my motto was, if it's brown, it's down, you know. Right. I didn't even see it. I mean, and he was massive apparently. And, you know, he was 44 yards, and I shot and I missed, and it was the worst thing. I mean, it was like, it looked like a perfect shot, and it went right under this bear, and he took off right after that. And Jake, who was with me, goes, that's the biggest bear I've ever seen. You know, I'm certain little Pope and Young, we have got to stay out here and find that bear. There's, you know, there's another water spot out here. You know, it was hot, you know, it was early September.
Yep.
And so that was one of the things I wanted to do too. Is like, I felt like a lot of that stuff when y'all were talking about cold calling earlier is I probably wasn't doing it in the right spots. And I felt like if anything, I was just advertising myself to where they didn't want to be. Yeah. And so this time I thought, you know, I was sitting water and I was just kind of being quiet. And if I heard something, I would try to go after it, you know, but I was able to change hunting tactics that way. But, you know, so we were going out there and, Jake went with me and I missed that black bear, and we decided we're going to stay out there, and we found this other water hole. And kind of make this little makeshift blind looking down over this water hole out of wood and, you know, stuff. And this is like 10 o'clock in the morning. So we're committing now. This is no longer a noon hunt. I had no food with me. I'd switched packs and I just filled up my water and stuff. Jake had no food with him. And so now we're just kind of committed to sitting all day waiting on a big black bear to show up. And sit there all day, let Jake use both my backup batteries and stuff. And then lo and behold, I mean, we're not thinking anything at all. And like, we're sitting, you know, staring out the front of this little nice makeshift blind we made. And behind us, you know, we didn't make any blind behind us, so we're just completely exposed. So, something starts walking down the hill and he says, shit's an elk. So the blind's no good, right? So just stand up and turn around and look behind us. Now, and so sure enough, I mean, these elk are coming right down to water, and, you know, I wasn't going to wait to see what was back there behind them. There was this nice big cow coming in, and I've got the video on Instagram and everything. Jake was lucky enough to video it, but like, she was walking right there, and I honestly didn't see her. I mean, cause I mean, you know how it is out there. I mean, it's really hard, even when you're 17 yards. I mean, that's how long the shot was. It was still like, her head came back from behind this one tree really quick, and I had to stop her within a foot and a half between two aspens. And just, there's like a little whistle in that video, and she stops, and that's like right when I shoot. And she takes off, and she ran about 50 yards, and we heard a big old crash, you know, and then that's when the real work started. And I mean,
yeah. I'm telling you, those cows are big, man.
I couldn't believe like how big she was. I mean, and I'm a farm boy, right? Yep. I'm used to I work cattle. I flank cattle and stuff like that. And this was nothing doing. I'm telling you what, like she was laid over a log. And so it was first kind of like, all right, thank God I had Jake there with me because it was like I was like, all right, well, you know, and that was the next thing too, was like, man, I'm glad I have him here because he's done this so many times. I've watched the YouTube videos and stuff and I was ready to do it myself, but there was no way it was going to be like a pretty thing at all. And so, but even with him, it was still so hard him knowing what to do because it's, you don't think about it. You're on the side of a dadgum hill.
Right.
With, I mean, it's not like an ideal spot where, you know, something's strung up, you know? And so, And so we get her lodged under a log somehow, right? And like, I didn't realize like there'd be a 2 week delay and like shoulder pain. But like, I tried to pull her up, like my little brother's a physical therapist. He's like, you messed up something, Bryson. But I tried to pull her up a hill to try to get her out from under a log. She'd become wedged under. No, sir. Wasn't even happening.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle, a run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
And so by that time, we had the cook, you know, Mike, an amazing cook, too. Their food was awesome. He said, hey, I'm going to – but that's the kind of people, right? He didn't even have to do anything. He said, I'm coming down there. He was in his 50s.
Yeah.
I think he'd had some leg operations too, because he had a little bit of a limp and he had no problem walking down there finding us, but he did have a problem finding us. And Jake tells me, right? So it's Jake and I together. Jake's phone's dead. He has no flashlight. I brought my headlight. Thank goodness. My phone's at 15% now and I've just kept it off because I'm only using Onyx. And now my flashlight, because Jake says, I've got to go find Mike, who's trying to find us to help pack out, and he's lost and he knows how to find him, but he's going to need my headlight. And so he takes my only light and now I'm sitting there like covered in blood
in the dark.
In the spot, I was getting ready to see the trophy bear, right?
There's some trophy bears around.
Trophy bear right there somewhere.
And I'm telling you, these Quakies, man, these aspens, I've never seen them with like these bear claw marks in them before. Oh, I mean, they were all scarred up. And so I'm sitting there, my phone's on 15% and I find this like a little branch I can balance it on to turn my light on because I'm trying to take the final quarter off. Like, and I'm literally like laid under that log trying to cut, you know, up under there. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to turn on some Tom Petty. Cause at this point, I'm too exhausted to even fight a bear. Like, I mean, I'm just like just laid under there. Like if a bear shows up, I'm too exhausted to even put up a fight to try to grab my gun or whatever. I was like, maybe the Tom Petty and the light will be enough of a deterrent until like Jake and Mike return to save me or something like that. And thank goodness. I mean, nothing showed up that I know of, but you know, that thought certainly crossed my mind as I was lodged under that log, just trying to, and literally just kind of, you know, blindly slashing with my knife, trying to get that top of her quarter off because it was, you know, it's not like, it's, you know, it's with your deer and stuff. You just kind of roll them around. If you want to do that, it was, she was so big. I didn't realize how big they were.
They're times the size. A big cow is 5-6 times the size of a big whitetail, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they're so awkward, you know?
Because it was a whole bunch of deadfall where she was. Yeah. And so there, and I couldn't move the deadfall either. It was way too heavy. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of like, you know, just putting a square in a round hole, I guess. But we got her out of there. We got her off and I got a freezer full of meat and I got a ton of good friends and I got a good story and I've got a lot of experience and you know, I mean, man, and that's the best thing about it. It's like, you know, the Elk Bro stuff, like y'all having me on here, everybody you meet on the mountain for the most part, I've never had any bad experience. Everybody's out there doing their best. They're all putting in work. They're all out there trying to do the same thing. And you talk about, you know, frustrated sometimes. I mean, I remember one day I was one of those days this last hunt, I was solo went out really, really early, decided I was going to pack in, you know, 2.5 miles, and I get all the way down there. The sun comes up and a hunter whistles at me and he's in the top of a tree. And I'm thinking, Sunday britches. Like, yeah. I put in all this work and I'm down here at this very bottom. And now it's like, there's a guy right there and he's got a, he like had a ladder down there. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. Like, where'd you come from? Because my hike down was not pleasant at all. Like it was, you know, unfavorably rough, matter of fact. And so then it's like, you see him, it's like, well, dadgum, now I got to hike all the way. Forget about hunting. You know, I can't stay down here now. I've got to hike back out and hunt. And it's just one of those things, man. It's the whole way is, I think a part of it is just when you get adversity dealt with you and this kind of stuff, it's about just kind of gritting your teeth and going right through it. And, you know, it's not humbling. Always going to be, there may be 7 years now I go without shooting anything. But you know, but that's the kind of one. When she showed up, I was like, I ain't waiting for the next one because I sure do want to eat some elk. Yeah. But it makes it that much better. If it wasn't hard, everybody would do it and you wouldn't learn anything. Yeah. You wouldn't have conversations like this and it wouldn't make you the person you are, you know? And so I look forward to going back up there every year or learning something new about myself, challenging myself. Look forward to meeting new people. I'm a social person and the best thing in the world is listening to other, for me is I love to tell elk stories now that I have one, but I love listening to everybody else's too and having a cold drink and hear about how everybody else's hard work paid off because I like, you know, to me, it's kind of like being a team player.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds like our elk camp, doesn't it, RC?
Yes, sir. Yes, yeah. Sir.
Man, Bryson, that's an awesome story. And, you know, we echo those sentiments, man. It's the hard that makes it great. Mm-hmm. And, everybody we meet on the mountain, man, we try to befriend them for sure. Cause you never know who you're going to need help over the next ridge, you know, and, exactly. And look, for the most part, everybody we've met on the mountain or, you know, in our circle, man, it's been so, subservient and man, want to help. And I mean, RC's had some guys that even worked for him that helped some guys out that were in our group. I mean, everybody up in that country, man, knows what it's like to put the work in and to work really hard. So man, kudos to you for putting the work in and having elk hunting change your life, brother. And yeah, fantastic stories. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. And man, look, we're going to go back to our Elk Bros mailbox and we'd love for you to stick around and feel free to jump in and help us with these next couple of questions, Bryson.
All right. If I can, I'll be glad to.
RC, I'll let you take this next one from Roger Campbell.
I don't have it on.
I got you. Okay. All right. Roger Campbell says, I've never heard you or anyone else address the following situation. Say you hit an animal and it takes a lot of hours, including overnight, to find it. And when you finally do, it's been heavily eaten on by the local wildlife and super stiff. Obviously, temperature has an impact, but how do you guys decide what can be saved or if it's a partial or total loss?
Get the tenderloins and legs.
The tenderloins are on the inside.
The inside, yes, sir. Yeah.
What do you say, RC? You probably dealt with a bunch of that before.
Well, it's like you say, it depends on what kind of year or the temperature is outside. How much bloat you got, you know, you kind of know once you get into the animal and you start cutting it, you can kind of smell it. Yeah. You can almost sense or, you know, well, this isn't any good. Yeah. Or, wow, this piece here is totally red and it's about half cool. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't hesitate to take any of it if it's like that.
Especially now, if it's been cold overnight.
Yeah, know? I mean, but the smell, I think, is a big thing.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You got to be able to determine. Yeah. Hmm.
And you can smell it if it's rancid, brother. I'm telling you.
Believe me. Pretty
daggum close to, you know, if it has a gamey, nasty smell to it, man, I wouldn't take it. And look, I've been there. I've been there on a whitetail. It was super cold. Had the butt of it eaten out by, you know, a coyote that caught him. I shot him a little back in the liver, but it was mid-30s all night. And, you know, I mean, I knew that the meat wasn't going to spoil. I went out there the next morning. Sure enough, he'd eaten about half of the left ham and a little bite out of the right ham. So, man, I I cut both them hams off there and cut around the outside of where that coyote had eaten and made sure I got enough around there and took that meat was fine. As a matter of fact, RC will tell you, my first bull I ever killed in my life, I had to let him go overnight. It was probably in the mid 30s that night. Mm-hmm. Next morning we got up and at first daylight we met a landowner there where he crossed a barrier and they let me go in there and find my elk, and that elk was fine, man. The food, mm-hmm. the meat off that elk was fantastic. But as long as you got good, cool night and cool weather, cold weather, you know, I'm not talking about in the 50s or 60s. When it gets above 50 degrees, it's, you know, time's against you, you know, that blood, as soon as that animal starts dying, the enzymes in that blood start breaking down and it starts spoiling. So, it's important for you to get to them as quick as you can. But if it's been cold overnight, man, you can cut around that stuff that's been eaten and, you know, or discard it and take the stuff that hasn't, you know.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We got Bryson, you got anything to offer on that?
No, because y'all guys will probably know hunting up there better than I would. But I will tell you, when I shot mine, I could not believe how quick she bloated.
Yeah.
Because we were trying to process her, and we couldn't even actually get the tenderloins out because we couldn't get up in there. She had bloated so much, and she was under that log that cutting in there was not going to be safe. And at that point, there were so many gases and everything going on. And it was probably – I shot her at 7 o'clock, and I bet it was 55, maybe. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it was upper 50s, but it wasn't 40s. And, like, you know, the guy that hit me, Jake, was like, there's no way those, like, she's already bloated too much. And I was like, wow, you're right. I mean, I couldn't believe how, and that was, you
again,
know.
Again, the warmer it is, the quicker it was hour. Bloat.
Yeah, and that
the
was
the warmer late. It is, the quicker those gases will get ignited.
And that's exactly why, you know, when I found those guys ahead of time, was I was looking for somebody, because if I shot something, that's the last thing I wanted to happen was, to lose all that good meat, especially me being, you know, a novice elk processor, you know, and that would have been something I wouldn't have realized, you know, then how quickly they would bloat up there and stuff like that. So, I mean, it's one of those things you really got to pay attention to, I think.
Especially from the temperature.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And be cognizant of, you know, when you're hunting.
Good question, Mr. Campbell. I hope we answered, everything, and good luck on your next hunt. Mr. Dave, Chav, you want to take, Mr. Greeley's?
Sure. Dave Greeley from El Paso, Texas. He asks, it seems like the last 2 years I get a bull bugling the last 30 minutes before the end of legal shooting light, which actually seems like it's already almost too dark to take a shot. When or why would you decide that it's best to back out with a fading light? How do you feel about shots in the last minute? Thank you all for what you share.
That's a good question.
Yeah, there's two options here. As long as you can see your pins you know, you can probably take a shot. Now, if it's, bugling and it seems like it's going to take a while before it comes into range, well, you located the bull, the general area. You can just back off and come back in the morning if the wind's right and you know there's going to be a bull in the area. So that's how I would answer that. What do you guys think?
Yeah, absolutely. Manano?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, it happened to you last season, better, right?
Yeah, it did.
You got RC calling for you, and then you got a bull pretty close, and it was dark, and then you decided to go back. And
had to back out. Yep.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, remember that, RC?
We had him right on top of us. And he was right
below us in a little ridge, but it got to where I couldn't even see my pins, and there's no reason to educate him and call him in tight when all we got, we know where he's at. We just got to back out of there, and as a matter of fact, I think it was the next day, RC, you had him coming on the other side of you over there and had him at about 20 yards and just couldn't get it done. I mean, it was just bad luck, right?
Right. Yep. I think that one of the things that you, a late shot in the afternoon or in the evening, you have to weigh all the stuff.
Yeah.
And that's like, okay, what's the distance? Are you shooting 60 yards or are you shooting 50. Under 20, 15, somewhere in there? Now, if you're shooting at 15 yards and he's right on top of you, and you can see your pins, You've got a great shot. Put two holes in it.
Now it fits, but, it fits the comment, which pin? All of them.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's right.
But I think that that's a big part that you and then you got to think about it. Okay, now, do I have enough light?
Yeah.
In my backpack? Is it worth it? I mean, to me, it's like, okay, I generally back out, I leave, and I get back in there and make a play for the morning.
Yep.
You know, so it's real early, and you get right back in there, and you generally have I like the morning hunt. Yep, much better than the evening hunt.
You ain't got plenty of time to look for them when you hit them.
Exactly.
Stuff like that. Yep. Mm-hmm. And look, I mean, I've shot a lot of, I counted them up. I've shot as many bulls in the evening as I've shot in the morning time. But it's sure a whole lot easier when you go in there looking for them when you got than it is not. And you don't have critters you're worrying about too, because bears and all the other predators like to be out at night hunting as well. So, it's definitely something to think about. But yeah, I mean, if you can get him in tight and you see your pins, and no everything's question. Right, man, let the hammer down, you know. Mm-hmm. You'll get some help and come help you look for him and make sure you got plenty of good lights. I mean, that's one of the things we carry, a couple of different headlamps with us and big heavy duty flashlights where we can, you know, see. And as always, guys, if you 100% don't know if you've made a good shot or not, when in doubt, back out.
I was about to say that. In my opinion, that's the most important part of
when in doubt, back out. Because if you're not
able to make an ethical shot, back out.
Back out.
Because you're going to regret it.
Yeah. Exactly.
You're not shooting like 700 or 300 with mag on that.
Yeah.
Shooting a bow.
And look, guys, you know, these animals will run a couple of hundred yards at times. If you've covered a couple hundred yards and you've not recovered the animal, you have not made a super lethal shot. You need to back out and give them time, man. You know, read the signs. You know, we got some podcasts out there on how to read the signs, your color of blood that you're getting, whether you got bubbles in it, whether it's dark red and gritty, if it has some paunch smell to it. Those are the signs that you want to read when you're going to start searching for a bull at low light conditions. That, you know, even if you hear them crash, a lot of times they run like Bryson said, it sounds like the whole sky is falling on you when they take off running. But at the end of the day, you want to make sure you don't bump that animal, because when you bump them, they get a big surge of adrenaline and they can go for a long ways before they shut it down.
Mine had absolutely no blood. It was the weirdest thing. And my whitetail before that, I started shooting these expandables. I'm like, I shot a whitetail and it didn't pass through, but it looked like I'd done surgery on it. Like I cut open the whole side of it, but like wherever it fell, it bled all out. And so Jake was like, I don't see any blood. And I said, I know I hit it, but like, it's going to be just like that whitetail, I guarantee you. And, you know, he just happened to see her, you know, laying over a log. He's like, is that elk over there? He's like, there she is. Yeah, there was not one drop of blood. And we just watched her, you know, go, and we heard her fall and just kind of waited.
Where did it hit him?
It hit her right in the shoulder, and it went right in her heart. It was sticking right in her heart. So
cool.
Wow.
Well, that's, man, fantastic questions, guys. That'll be the last question that we go through, and we'll address more questions on our next show. Bryson, so good to have you here on our show, man, and share with us what elk hunting's mean to you and how it's changed your life.
We
sure appreciate you joining us. And, I want all of our listeners, you know, to understand here. If you want to have your questions answered on our show, please send us a question to info@elkbros.com. That's info@elkbros.com. And, today we want to close for sure in remembering one of our very close friends who passed away in a tragic accident today. And, I'm telling you, man, I'm heartbroken for him and his family, and all of us here at Elk Bros want you to share our condolences with the family of Shane Rasmussen. And from here to all of us, a big send off like we talk here and say here in the Lone Star State, husbands kiss your wives, wives kiss your husbands, hug your babies, keep your broad head sharp and your powder dry. And we'll see you next week right here on Blue Collar Elk Hunting. And here is our tribute to Mr. Shane Rasmussen.
I myself and all of us here at Elk Bros would like to pay tribute and honor to a good friend of ours, Shane Rasmussen. Shane, in just a very short time, is the type of person that has an effect on everybody he gets to know. He's that person that is just full of passion, passion for the outdoors, his love for hunting, and his passion for his family. With that, we'd like to send our condolences to the entire Rasmussen family and all of those friends and relatives so close to Shane. We know that there were a bunch of you. And in our small way, if we can, here's our chance, our opportunity to honor you, Shane, your memory, and it won't be forgotten.
Shane Rasmussen from Garden City, Utah, with my dad, Dennis, my son, Corey, my son, Ryder, and my brother, Clint. We're up here elk hunting.
And we're having a ball.
1, 2, 3, 4.
One day we can do something special that someday leaves a lifelong impression. Let's all join our hands together today. Time has come, today's the day, we can all find a way to take time for the ones in need, take time and do a good deed, cause one day we can do something special, that someday leaves a lifelong impression, let's all join our hands together, today, one day, I know we can make a difference, join together by a common interest, a little help can go a long way, and one